From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The acclaimed playwright Eve Ensler has spent decades advocating for women and girls who have survived sexual violence. Now, with her latest book, she has focused on her own survival and yet again blazed a trail for others to follow. In a short and devastating book titled simply The Apology, Eve Ensler wrote an apology in the voice of her own father for the crimes he committed against her through childhood sexual and physical abuse. It is not easy at all to read the apology, but it is necessary. And it comes at a critical moment when women the world over are demanding to be heard for the abuses they've survived. Eve Ensler is the Tony Award-winning playwright, performer, and activist who has authored the international phenomenon, The Vagina Monologues, which won an Obie Award. It's been published in 48 languages, performed in over 140 countries. She's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, I Am an Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World. She's the founder of V-Day, the global movement to end violence against women and girls, whose central campaign is 1 Billion Rising. And she's considered one of the nation's most influential women, dedicating her life to ending sexual violence against women and girls worldwide. My personal connection to Eve Ensler is through the work that her and I have done working with Afghan women and advocating for them. It's such an honor to have you on the program, Eve.
Thank you, Sonali. I'm so happy to be back.
Thank you. So this book, as I said, not easy to read, but so necessary to read. Tell me about the process of writing it. I understand that you wrote it in just a few short months, which for a book like this, or any book for that matter, is a very, very short period of time. And it almost sounds like the book sort of channeled itself through you.
It did. It was kind of like a fever is the only way I can describe it. And it was 4 months, but it was morning, noon, night. It was that kind of thing. And I think it was a fever. It was a possession. It was a trance. And I think once I made the decision that I was going to write an apology to myself from my father and write the words and say the words I needed to hear, once I opened that portal, he really came in and began to speak. And I think, you know, I think the whole experience of this book is different than anything I've ever written before. It's strange because the vocabulary of the book, the voice of the book is just not my own. It feels like he was so present throughout the writing of it.
And so you tapped into just your own knowledge of the intimate details of his life, because you go into who he was as a young man, even the relationship he had with his brother and in meeting your mother, his wife.
I think the book is on one level a conjuring. It's an imaginative act because there's a lot about my father I didn't literally know. He didn't talk about himself. But I think for all survivors, particularly if your abuser or perpetrator is in your family, we sometimes know our abusers better than we know ourselves, because we have to, we listen to their footsteps or the sound of their voice or how many drinks they've had or what their mood is to know how to protect ourselves. And I think what I discovered is how deeply my father lives or lived inside me, how I've really been in a dialogue with him consciously or unconsciously most of my life. And this was really just bringing that to a conscious surface level. And I think in terms of his childhood, there was much I didn't know. There were bits I knew. And I think on the basis of that, I began to imagine and I began to let him tell me who he had been and what had happened to him as a child that had really made him a person who was capable of sexual abuse and sadism.
Eve, did your trauma and the abuses that you survived inform the work you have done in your life and give you that impetus, that thirst for justice?
I think so. I think I used to make a bargain when I was a child that if I would survive and I would get free, I promised I'd come back for the others. You know, it was just like this, you know, bargaining you do with God or higher forces or whatever it is. And I think I knew from an early age the kind of impact sexual violence and then really terrible physical violence was having on me. So there was some kind of, there was a commitment I made to other women that I wanted to be part of whatever this struggle was to end this violence, because I knew how many years of my life it had taken.
Now, in writing through your father's perspective, how did you treat the abuse that you suffered? I mean, you basically wrote from your abuser's perspective, and it's not an unsympathetic picture.
Well, I think, first of all, the book really is an apology. And so I had to learn what an apology is. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really exciting, because I had to learn the anatomy of an apology and the tenets of an apology, that it's a humbling, that it's a person making themselves vulnerable, that it's an equalizer. No one can be on top and no one can be on bottom. Mm-hmm. That really, the apology is made in the details, where a person says the exact things they have done to you and what the motivations and intentions were behind those things. Because the liberation is in the details. It's your perpetrator or abuser getting inside you and feeling, what did those terrible deeds and actions do to you? And how did you feel as a result of them? And what were the long-term impacts on you, on your community, on your family? And then it's that perpetrator looking at their own past. What in my childhood, what in my acculturation into patriarchy and toxic manhood have led me to do those things? And then it's being accountable for those things and making amends and evidencing that you, as a result of this apology, wouldn't be capable of doing those things again. So I think in doing this, I learned that, you know, you, and you know as well as I do, that one of the major problems we have in America is diabolical amnesia, right? We forget everything. We forget the history of this country, which is founded on the pillaging and colonizing and destruction of indigenous people, and then the 400 years of slavery, African Americans and Jim Crow, and we've never apologized. We've never remembered. And I think what an apology is, it's an antidote to amnesia. It forces you to remember. It forces you to say that what occurred did occur, because you were actually detailing what occurred. And I think this whole process was really revelatory in me understanding how deeply we need to be taught what an apology is. I mean, we teach prayer, right? We teach the petition and the humbling of the petition. We teach the devotion and the dedication and the concentration of prayer, but we don't teach the practice of apology, the journey of an apology, which requires all of your being and a dedication to truth and to the liberation of your victim.
Now, Michelle Alexander, the best-selling author, wrote this piece in the New York Times recently around the abortion issue, and her piece was titled, "My Rapist Apologized, I Still Needed an Abortion." Of course, that piece was primarily about abortion, but it was interesting where she had to find a way to explain to her daughter that she forgave her rapist, and, you know, obviously it was not a typical story, and most abusers don't apologize for the horrific crimes they commit, right? And yet, of course, that apology, in the specific case of Michelle Alexander, helped her to move on. An apology can help a victim, even if it never can erase the harm done. Can't it help a victim and a survivor to ease some of the trauma?
I think it's the critical thing. I think it's the critical thing. I think here we are, you know, we have for so many years in the movement to end violence against all women, and particularly with this new iteration of Me Too, we have called out men, we've told our stories, we've broken the silence. But if we're really going to move forward, men now have to do their piece of it, which is reckoning, apology, and accountability. And what I learned in this book, even though I was writing the apology for myself from my father, when you hear the words, when someone says to you, "I did this to you, and this is why I did it, and I had malintention," and I, even if it's painful, it is so liberating, because the thing that I think haunts survivors is, one, this sense that their perpetrators take no responsibility, will not acknowledge it happening. And two, what is the why? Why was this done to me? Why did someone rape me? Why did my best friend drug me and rape me on a date? Why did my father want to kill his daughter? When you apologize, you outline the why. And that begins to not make sense, because you can never make sense of horrific violence, but it begins to at least locate it in a very specific place, which begins to allow a very definite release to happen. And I think if we don't begin to find these pathways where men are coming forward to tell us what they've done, to look into the histories to understand why they've done it, we are going to be at this stalemate and violence is going to continue.
In a way, do you hope that the apology that you have written from your father to you could offer, I mean, not necessarily a model or an outline, but at least just an example of what you would like for perpetrators of violence to do? And you, as a lifelong activist working to end violence against women, have seen this in every country, not just in the United States, in so many countries around the world, in places where women have suffered tremendous violence, horrific gang rapes on the front lines of wars. Is this the kind of thing that you hope men will learn to do? Because in a way, here you are, a survivor of abuse, essentially spelling out what you needed from your abuser.
I think very much so. I do dream that this book is a kind of blueprint, that if you read it, you know, there was a journalist in London who said every survivor should send this anonymously to her abuser, which I thought was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
But I think we've started this website called the apologybook.net, and we're doing all these writings on what is an apology and why is it important. And we're inviting people to send in anonymous apologies to victims, and also to write, if they'd like, letters from their abusers to themselves. And we got our first apology letter this week, and I was so moved by it. It was so honest. It was so detailed. It was so specific. And I believe that there is a readiness. I've been traveling now for weeks with the book, and many men have been coming out to the events. And a lot of men have been interviewing me and talking to me about what are the pathways? How do we begin to open up a kind of restorative justice process where men can come forward and take responsibility in a way that is satisfactory to their victims? And to me, this is the next stage of our movement. If we're really talking about ending this violence and moving to a new level of consciousness. And a very exciting development was that at City of Joy, our sanctuary and revolutionary center for women in the Congo, where women come for 6 months, 90 women, to heal, to be empowered, to learn their rights, to become leaders, they introduced the exercise of writing letters to yourself from your perpetrator a month ago, and it has taken off. And the director there said she came into her office the other day, and there were piles of letters from women who were just writing them all night. So I think it can work both ways. It can work. It's a call to men to really come forward, to take the risk, to be the brave cadre that begin to break the silence. You know, my father says in the book, to be an apologist is to be a traitor to men. And I think there's something so chilling about that idea. You know, why in 16,000 years of patriarchy have we never heard one man make a public, authentic, thorough apology about sexual abuse? Not one man that I can think of, and no one else that I've talked to. I think it's almost as if once one man begins, it's going to start to shatter, shake and begin to crumble the columns of patriarchy. So we need the brave men to begin to come forward to say, what I did was wrong, and I knew what I was doing was wrong.
And of course, men aren't supposed to apologize, right? Even men are taught, they're socialized from a young age to not apologize for, you know, what they might have done. That's part of what we call toxic masculinity.
Exactly. I mean, apologizing is a sign of weakness, right? It indicates you would never make yourself vulnerable like that to somebody else. And in fact, this is what I really learned, because, you know, my father was speaking to me from a kind of limbo state where he's been mercilessly spinning for 31 years, rehashing his crimes. Nobody gets out of this world having done terrible deeds without feeling it and being possessed by it in their soul. Mm. So an apology is a liberation in both directions. It frees you from your crimes and it frees your victim from her suffering. And I think this is the period we need to move into if we're going to begin, if we really are talking about surviving as a species.
Eve, if you have written the apology that you should have gotten from your father, does it mean that you have forgiven your father?
Forgiveness is a really word, just a strange word, Sonali. I've always been a little wary of it because I see how it gets used. It feels often mandated. Do you know what I mean? Why don't you just get over it and forgive him? Why don't you just be done with it and just forgive him already? I don't know what I feel about forgiveness, but I do know about the alchemy of an apology. I know that when someone sits across from you and looks you in the eyes and goes through all those stages that I outlined at the beginning, does a detailed accounting, feels what you're feeling. You can see their heartbreak. You can see their pain. You can see their empathy. You can see, hear why they did what they did. You can see their history. When someone goes through that thorough thing, something happens inside you as the victim where you get released psychologically, physically, spiritually, and rancor, bitterness, betrayal, hatred suddenly gets released. And if that's forgiveness, fine. That's forgiveness. But I don't think we can skip this crucial piece of the process, which is accountability. And I think often survivors are told to forgive without that crucial piece. Hmm. I also just want to say one other thing, that this is an offering. It's not a prescription. It's not a have to. Every survivor knows what they have to do and when they have to do it. I don't know that I could have done this 5 years ago. I know for me, I was holding on to tentacles of my own, of a narrative where I was in perpetual victim to my father's perpetrator, even though my father was dead. And I didn't want to be living in that narrative anymore. I wanted to be living in a new paradigm. And I have to say, writing this book has freed me out of that paradigm. So it is a really profound exercise. If you want to do it, I would suggest doing it with counseling, with therapists, with clergy, with support. But it means you have to kind of go through the wound and feel a lot of pain for a little bit. And then on the other side of that, my experience is it's very free where I am right now.
The apology that is necessary from abusers to the victims, is that a first step? Not necessary first step, but at least a first step toward justice. I mean, what you were saying earlier, especially when we talk about transformative justice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the first step, right? Okay. I mean, I was just with our director, Monique Wilson, from the Philippines of 1 Billion Rising, and she had bought my book to the comfort women in the Philippines. And then, you know, there's so few of them left, the women who were taken by the Japanese during World War II and held in rape camps and were raped sometimes after up to 50 times a day when they were 14, 20 years old. These women have been waiting 70 years for an apology from the Japanese government. And there were pictures of them holding the book, the apology, and what they were saying was, all we want is an apology. We want the Japanese government to acknowledge this happened. Because that way it frees us, it frees our families, it frees all of us. And I think you can't have, impunity is based on a lack of apology, isn't it? Because once you apologize for something, you acknowledged it happened. So I think it's the first step in any kind of justice process.
Right, it's even making me think about the kind of apology that we need to have here in this country for some of the things you were mentioning earlier about that this country has never acknowledged or apologized for in the way that needed apologizing for the institution of slavery, the genocide of Native Americans, and so much more.
Exactly. And I think, you know, somebody asked me the other day, I was speaking to a group of lawyers, and they said, what about the fact that if you apologize, you could go to prison? And I said, well, first of all, there's many convicted people who could already begin the apology process.
Yeah.
But second of all, I mean, maybe there's a possibility to begin to think about how do we integrate a thorough, authentic apology mechanism into the justice process, whereby, for example, you are a victim of sexual abuse and you are given you're given a choice by your prosecutor. Do you want to convict them and have them go to prison? Do you want an apology process or do you want both? And let's say you say, I want the apology process. What that would mean is that your perpetrator would go through a determined amount of time, a year or two, working with therapists, working with clergy, working with advocates, who would take them through a process where they would open up, begin to deepen, look at themselves, evaluate their histories, their stories, be truly, truly accurate about what they've done. And then at the end of this whole process, sit with their victim in front of a panel and make their apology. And see whether their victim accepted that apology and whether the panel believed that this person had gone through an authentic, thorough process which had released him from response, you know, and had become accountable. To me, this would be a way of really changing violence, because we would actually, in the process, be taking people who had done these terrible crimes and actions, and hopefully they would be becoming different kinds of people, which is not what happens to people in prison.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the opposite happens to people in prison.
Right. And so through that transformation, what you, of course, do is prevent more abuse from that same person, which is so critical. Eve, you said you might not have been able to write this book even 5 years ago. And what's so interesting is just in the last couple of years, this seems to have been, I don't know, a shift. I don't want to call it a collective awakening, because it's not as though women have just begun speaking out about the abuses they face, but it seems as though they're being heard, or maybe there's just enough of them speaking out now that a dam has burst. And if we think of it as the hashtag MeToo movement, women in Hollywood are saying time's up. Does this chapter that we seem to have started, and there's no going back from it, give you hope?
Oh, it gives me immense hope. And I just want to remind us that, as you well know, having been in the struggle for a long time, you know, this movement to end violence against women is 70 years old.
Yeah.
It began with African-American women speaking up against white rapists, right? So, and then we have many, many, many iterations of it. This has all come to me too, which is now the kind of breakthrough moment. I have enormous hope. I have enormous hope, but I will say this, because I have seen how patriarchy operates. It's like a bad virus. It will come back if it is not eradicated. And the truth is, unless we move to this next critical piece where men actually change, where men actually become accountable and make apologies and start reckoning with what they've done, we will keep being here, because that's the piece that has to change in order for us to move forward. And I think all of us kind of know that in our being right now. Like, we've got to push up now to not, I guess the way I would describe it is, we can't keep going up against it. We have to go under it. We have to go, what are the roots of this? What are the roots of all this violence? And how do we begin to cure those roots and redirect those roots?
Eve, I should say, I thought when we started this interview that this would be a very, very a personal conversation, but I should have known better, knowing the work that you've done, that you have taken your experiences and you have found such clear paths to apply them for justice for everyone. And I think that's so critical, because often we have these personal stories that happen to each of us, but we don't see them in that larger framework reflected in other people's experiences, and especially as a way to move things forward for justice, for progress. And I just want to say that I think that it's just so powerful that you've taken your experience and what seems to be a very important cathartic act for you in writing this book, and found a way to have it apply to women everywhere who've struggled and suffered as you have. And so let's talk about the website you mentioned earlier. I understand that there's a kit that people can download,
yes.
The apology kit.
Yes, Farah Tanis, who is one of the founders of the Black Woman's Blueprint, who's a wonderful woman and activist, she was really moved by the apology, and they've also done much work around restorative justice, and she created this brilliant toolkit that people can use on the website to begin to work on apologies. There's also wonderful writings on the site by all kinds of advocates, from Toni Porter to Jane Fonda to Tandy Newton, to incredible thinkers. And we'd love to have you, Sonali, write something. And anybody who's listening, write in. What is an apology and why is it important? And then I think what we really love to begin to see is people writing in their anonymous apologies, beginning to get this broader conversation going, and then looking at how do we apply the notion of apology, reckoning, and accountability to various forms and areas of racial justice, of gender justice, of justice for indigenous peoples, and how do we begin to move into a time of reckoning, where we start to think, what are creative reparations for things? What are ways that we can look into our own histories and our own stories and see where are we ancestrally responsible for things? Where are we responsible in this lifetime for things? And also, I just want to say that making an apology, you know, since I've written the book, I have made a few apologies because I just thought, well, you got to practice what you preach. And
what have you got to apologize for, Eve?
Well, we all screw up. We all make mistakes, you know, and we all do things we're not proud of. And we all have our moments. And I just say, every time I make a thorough apology, some energy that has been clogging me, blocking me up, making me a less better person gets freed up. Okay. So the apologies for us, really, hopefully it helps our victim. But really, if you have done something terrible and you have hurt something, you are suffering. And as a result of that suffering, you're probably doing more terrible things because you're acting out about it. The apology is a way of cleansing that so that you can move forward and be kinder, be more humane, be more connected, be more loving. And right now, in the time that we're living in, with this mad predator in chief, with the kind of escalation of hatred of immigrants, white supremacy, a defilement of our Mother Earth, wars being you know, imagined in every direction, we have got to be people who don't keep escalating this cycle of punishment, and violence. We have got to be the people who go the other way.
Eve, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and spending this time with us. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. So happy to talk to you, Sonali.
My guest has been Eve Ensler, the Tony Award-winning playwright, performer, and activist. You, of course, have heard of The Vagina Monologues, which is an international phenomenon that won her an OB, and it's also been performed in many languages in many countries. And she's written several other best-selling books. And the one that we're talking about is her latest, called The Apology. Eve is also the founder of V-Day. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe for our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.